Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
You have now arrived at Stadium and Gale.
The snap. The kick. It's been blocked again. How about it? It's been blocked again.
He's going to heave one deep down the field. It's going to be to the goal line. It's going to be gone. It's a touchdown. And the Gators have won the game. Tyree Cleveland. How about it? I can't believe what I just saw.
Dropping back the throw. Pops and fires the ball. Over the middle.
You have now arrived at Stadium and Gale.
Boys and girls, ladies and gents, welcome to another episode of Stadium and Gale. This is Dan.
And Delatorre. Just the two of us in my
same corner, same time, half the host. Jordan will be joining us shortly, and Corey is likely off for today. He took it up with HR. It's Harlem's birthday, so happy birthday to Harlem. Corey, we miss you, but it is the off season, so go have fun and go celebrate Harlem's birthday. Nick, how was your weekend, my friend?
Buddy, it still is the weekend. We are celebrating our anniversary. A little bit early, a week, 2 weeks early, but we always come back up to the Casa Monica here in St. Augustine, where we stayed when we got married. Dan was there cutting up a rug, really keeping the dance floor alive when I got married. But we brought the girls. Can I tell you this? Not to snitch on Frankie. Terrible twos. I think she just rounded up. We're not at 2 years old, but I think we rounded up. Tough weekend. Tough weekend. Vacationing with 202, very different than a vacation that you might be picturing in your mind.
I can imagine. Well, what I saw that you guys went to, you guys are just what, bouncing around St. Augustine? Do you guys have any big plans, or is it just kind of relaxing?
The plan was relaxing, but again, vacation with 202. I need a vacation after this. I think this will be the last vacation without Papa and Nana.
Okay.
Papa and Nana are crucial to future vacations. Went to the alligator farm today. Okay. Frankie loved that. It's sort of terrifying to bring two children, and there's just dozens of alligators, gigantic dinosaur creatures.
That's not Gatorland, right? It's a different place.
Not Gatorland. Yeah. It's a lot of just like reptiles and birds at alligator farm, whatever it was called, but. Yeah, just did that, hanging out by the pool. We just love this hotel. It's right down, like downtown, right next to Flagler. So we just love this area. We really haven't even taken the car anywhere. It's kind of like whatever we can walk to around here. Had to drive to the alligator farm today, but other than that, just whatever's walkable. What's that street? I should know. It's like George Street, King Street.
King Street is in Charleston.
King Street's here too.
Okay.
It's like St. George or something. We were literally just there. We just ate at Prohibition Kitchen for dinner, 4 o'clock dinner.
St. George Street.
Which I just learned, the buildings are made to look like they're from Spanish settlers. That was made to look like that in the 60s.
Yeah, no, that doesn't surprise me. Yeah, I mean, architecture and construction's come a long way. I don't know if I'd want to dine in a restaurant in St. Augustine that was built in the 1500s.
I went 35 years of living before I realized that those were built in the 60s for tourism. But Sneakily, St. Augustine, great food scene. A bunch of it that we can't get to with children. That we're just like staring at on Google Maps and like looking at the menu and wishing that grandparents were here to watch the kids. But yeah, fun week. I will be back tomorrow. Yes.
Fool you once, shame on you. Fool me twice. Well, I can't be fooled again, as George Bush would say.
Upset of the century. Bring your parents on your anniversary vacations. Who would have thought?
I'll log that in the old notebook here just for future. I'll take any tips. Second go around, we'll take any tips. Man, it's good to have you. Not much this weekend. We've got a busy next couple of weekends. I'm actually, strangely enough, I don't know if I told you, it was my high school 20-year reunion a couple weeks ago. I didn't go because a group of us are all getting together in Atlanta. Strangely, like none of my friends from South Florida ended up like living in South Florida after college. So we're all going to Atlanta this weekend. So I'm super pumped about that. And then next week, I'm going to be up in Gainesville. I should have told you, but it's only for one night. I probably said this months ago, but I was recognized as UF's one of their 40 under 40. Somehow my application just got stuck in the pile with somebody else's, but I snuck right in. So that's next Thursday. So I'll be up in Gainesville, then going on the scalping trip. Fortunately, I don't have to answer Corey this time because he's not here when I say it on the pod about where his invite is. Eric took a spot this year, but who knows next year. Looking forward to that.
Big time. I think who else was on that? Brandon Spikes.
Yeah, Brandon Spikes. Ben Chase.
Ben Chase.
Sam Warfield, a buddy of mine. Alan Thompson from Stingray Media, I think.
Stingray Media. Yeah.
Yep. So he was there. A couple other people that I went to school with, but a really cool honor, really cool list of folks to be recognized with. So looking forward to a day in Gainesville next Thursday. Parents are coming up. Sarah's coming up. And then we'll head over to Steen Hatchie early Friday morning and catch some scallops. So looking forward to doing that.
Drive?
I don't know. From Tampa, it's like three and a half hours. It's a very boring drive. Like it's the same road almost the entire way. And there's just not much. I think Chiefland, Crystal River, then Chiefland, and then Steen Hatchie's, about as big as this computer screen as a city, but a really, really fun town. A reminder of old Florida, and scalping is a great time. So always excited for that trip. I've said excited a bunch of times. So let's get on with the show. We got Tyler Harden from 247 joining us to talk a little bit about recruiting. I think the Gators are nearing. I think this upcoming weekend is probably their last big official visit end of the season of this time, and then they'll take some time off, and then we'll get into camp. So obviously a lot of visitors this past weekend. Brewster and Royal, two recruits that we'll talk about, were on campus. The Gators lose a commit that we said on the show was likely going to happen last week, but we're going to talk and dive a lot more into recruiting here shortly. Hopefully Jordan can join us here in the not too distant future, but Nick, you get the illustrious honor shouting out Greg Brunt as we get on to our show today.
Fellow STA Raider, big time shout out to everyone at Brunt Insurance. Brunt Insurance is a family agency founded in Cooper City, Florida in 2013. From the Panhandle to the Keys, Brunt Insurance can insure anything you have, from boats, homes, life, Dan's, Jordan's wife's printing machine.
Yep.
If you value it, Greg can probably insure it. Reach out.
Including your life.
Yeah, I said life. I said life.
Oh, okay. My bad.
And, think I might need that after vacation without grandma and grandpa. I need to check into a life insurance policy for the kids. Call the good folks at Brunt Insurance at 954-589-2204. Give them a call. The call is free. They will save you money. We went to Greg Brunt about a year or 2 years ago, I think, for car insurance. Saved us. So, again, 954-589-2204. Greg, what'd it do, baby?
I love that, man.
I wonder if people can hear me in the hotel.
And then what? Hey. We want them to call Greg too. Yeah. Greg insures his house, my car, a bunch of stuff. So shout out to Greg. And then one time for our friends over at the Dykus, Burke, and Lewis Law Group. These are the smart guys to go to if you are looking for folks that will fight against the insurance company for you. They used to work on behalf of the insurance companies, and now they work to represent you. Give them a call at 727-258-0043. Again, 727-258-0043. Pipe damage, water damage, leaks, issues with your insurance coverage, storm damage, flood damage, whatever it might be. Again, the Dykus, Burke, and Lewis Law Group is the group to go to. That's DykusBurkeLaw.com or 727-258-0043. Shout out to those boys. Nick, I'll see you maybe in Gainesville in a couple weeks. I know I'm going to probably see you in August for that golf tournament, but your boy got approved for SEC Media Days. So,
big time.
I'm getting my questions worked up already.
Big time. What year will this be for me? 26th is my 13th SEC Media Day.
Okay. You'll have to show me the ropes. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know if
I'm lost. I'm lost in Tampa. I don't know. I don't know the setup in Tampa. I remember when we went out to Dallas for the one that was out there, just being completely lost. Like, it's back of my hand in Hoover. As much as I don't like the state of Alabama, no apologies. Not sorry. Or the city of Hoover. No apologies. Not sorry. I know the lay of the land there. I've figured out the lay of the land in Atlanta. I think that's where we were last year. But Tampa will be new.
Nick, I'll show you the ropes, brother. Those are my old stomping grounds. Current stomping grounds, but also my old stomping grounds, too.
But wait, how is it current and old?
Because I still roam the streets, Nick. I didn't go too far. Yeah. I ain't hard to find. As Deion Sanders would say,
you can take Dan out of the streets, but you can't take the streets out of Dan.
That's right. That's right. So, Nick, before Tyler joins us, Gators officially announced some renderings for their $1.45 billion enhancement. Now, I know people think that that's a ton of money. It is a ton of money. And a lot of people say, hey, you can bulldoze the swamp and build a new stadium for more, less money than that. First off, no, you can't. But second, Nick, let's talk a little bit about what the Gators are doing here. So obviously, big thing first, anytime you make any changes, you got to start bringing it up to code. So a lot of changes according to the law changes, the Americans with Disability Act. So that is a lot of money and a lot of costs. Completely redoing concourses, completely redoing bathrooms and concession, and then wrapping around almost the entirety of, I guess it's going to be the east side all the way through the south side, all the way to the west side with wraparound luxury boxes. Nick, can you share any more information as we look to embark on this project after the conclusion of the 2026 football season, taking us through, when you heard it here first on the pod a couple months ago, through the 2030 year?
Yeah, so they're going to do it. If you want to see like the model, Texas A&M, when they redid Kyle Field, they did it in quadrants. So you don't lose any time in the fall. That's the goal. Like, if Florida State ends on November 25th, like, they want to start construction in December and work as far as they can to get a quadrant done. So they'll do, you know, like, let's call it the northwest side of the stadium first. Northeast the next year, southeast, southwest, kind of split it up so that you're not losing games. What you mentioned about ADA compliance, like, the swamp is over 100 years old, I think. So it was grandfathered in. And there's a lot of people who, when you're going down the stairs, they're a little steep. There's no handrails. The seats are a little cramped. So the thing with ADA compliance, if you're grandfathered in, the second you start doing any kind of renovation to a row, hey, you've got to do that entire section now. Everything has to be brought up to the code in that section. And I think I'd heard that, like, just to become ADA compliant, you're spending $200-$400 million.
Makes sense.
Just to be ADA compliant. Yeah. On top of everything else you wanted to do. And I think when you look at those, you know, I don't know that they're going to be like luxury suites. Cause when I think luxury, I think of like the 6th, 7th floor, like the Bull Gator glass on the east side. I think these will be more club seats where you have an indoor outdoor section. not like the touchdown terrace where it's one big section that's indoor. It'll kind of be like a traditional NFL stadium where, hey, we've got box number 234 and you've got your inside with couch, chairs, tables, food. And then you can go down, you can sit down outside into the seats.
Zoomed in on the picture a little bit. If you're watching on YouTube, you can kind of see that. And there's certainly going to be a lot more information, but based on the way that this photo looks, Nick, you're exactly right that there looks to be significantly more club seating, what looks to be more boxes that will be added. And all of that makes sense with the way that college sports is going. You can disagree. You can be adamant about this not being the sport that it used to be. And unfortunately, like, it's not the way that it used to be anymore. And if you're looking to fund a $1.45 billion stadium, that's going to come with asking a lot of people that are going to be giving a lot of money to the university, both now to help you support that, but in the future for them to have an opportunity. And UF doesn't have as many luxury options as maybe some other stadiums do, or what fans are asking for, especially moving into the future.
I mean, the luxury options are sold out.
They're gone. And I would imagine it's nearly impossible to get a suite now if you wanted one.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just the reality. Like, it's they are going to do a one for one. I know some people thought, like, oh, there's chair backs. I was told no chair backs in Laurel Bowl. Like, if your seat, if your state, your seat was a metal bleacher, one for one, your seat will still be a metal bleacher. If you were already in a chair back, you're going to have a chair back. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we're just at a point where, like, listen, I understand wanting the swamp to be loud, and I think a big price tag or a big part of the price tag is, hey, you could have done it a lot cheaper by just removing seats and not adding seats. Because when you become ADA compliant, now every seat has to be a little bit bigger. Even if it's just markers on the bleachers, has to be an inch on each side bigger. Extrapolate that 88,000 times, and now your seats that were on the 30 are in the end zone.
Yeah.
And so to update it, which it needed to be updated. And it's hard for me to say that, because, like, I only go to games in the press box. Like, I don't really get the game day environment down there. Or I don't have to sit in concession lines. There's going to be, I think, hundreds of more concessions or, like, touch points to grab food, grab drinks. But to do it without losing seats, you had to add these club seats. And you can look, if you're watching on YouTube, all those seats really wrap around the entire south side all the way to the north end zone. We haven't even talked about the tiny, stand-in box TV from the 1980s that is the current north end zone Jumbotron. It looks a little bigger there. But you, like, to add those seats, you're going to have to incur the price. And it's different buckets. You're not, you know, a lot of people are like, how's this going to be? It's NIL. You don't need to upgrade facilities. Like, the swamp needed to be upgraded. And I've said for a long time, like, Florida needed to upgrade facilities. And unfortunately, it wasn't until Scott Strickland got here that they were really interested in doing that. And that coincided with NIL. But, like, just because NIL started doesn't change the fact or erase that the facilities need to be upgraded. Like, the Keithen Stadium, I used to get yelled at by, like, Jeremy Foley, by people at Florida, like, the park was a dump. It was not fun to sit there. It was super hot. You've got a beautiful ballpark now. And they didn't waste $40 million putting a Band-Aid on McKeithen. They just built a new ballpark, which enabled you to do a standalone football facility, which you needed. So you've incurred a lot of expenses, but it's stuff that could have been done prior to Scott Strickland being here, but it just wasn't.
We're going to have to change the logo, Nick. They got rid of the spirals on the front and south, the north and south end. So those will be more traditional NFL, not the Dolphins. The Dolphins still have the circular, but Raymond James Stadium in Tampa, I think Jacksonville. If you've been to a game in the swamp, yes, it's going to change. Sports are going to change. The swamp is going to change. But if you've stood way too long in a concession line, you've 1,000,000%, especially if you're a male, have spent way too much time waiting for a bathroom. And it's an opportunity for Florida to not lose any seats, which would have caused riot to say the least, if they shrunk the size of the stadium. It already did on the internet. This is an opportunity for Florida to get better state-of-the-art facilities with hopefully not impacting any of the game day experience. And who knows, the way this stadium is built, it might even be louder in terms of the way that the sound reverberates off of the concrete and glass that is there. Quick question. Big Drew asked, when was the current edition of the Swamp Main? You can argue like 1991 and like 2003 is where the current iteration is. The upper deck, the sunshine seats and club seating were added in 91, Touchdown Terrace. And then in 2003, this press box was expanded and they added more luxury boxes. So probably 91 is the footprint of what you see. And then 2003 is kind of what you see, you know, with some additions there on, I think, the south end zone or the southwest side of the end zone there. So Q Lee, they should have torn it down and built a new stadium. It was never going to happen. And I don't know, when was the last college that has built a new stadium by bulldozing their old one? I mean, USF and UCF stadiums, but I don't know when the last college was that truly bulldozed an antique stadium.
People are forgetting this. Like, if you remember, it was like 3 or 4 years ago now, they floated out the idea that this is back when the guy had bought the Gainesville Country Club, and the Gainesville Country Club was going to be gifted to the UAA to have that turned into Florida's Golf Center. Mm-hmm. And then they were trying to do what everyone's trying to do with, you know, like the Battery in Atlanta. They wanted to do hotels, restaurants, bars, and make it an environment where even if there isn't a football game, you're over there. And the response of moving the Swamp. Now I see a handful. I won't even say it's a bunch. I see a handful of people being like, they should have just torn it down for this price. I'm like, where do you play? Where would the University of Florida play football? If you wanted to tear it down and build it right where it was, where would you play?
Yeah, and I don't think that you could build anything close to what the Gators want to build for that kind of money.
You're right there on university.
I mean, the Rays are about to build a baseball stadium and a whole facility of what you're talking about for over $2 billion. Yes, Gainesville land is cheaper and the cost of building should be slightly cheaper. But I think that their going rate is like $2.5 billion. So yeah. But yeah, the newest stadium's Northwestern. Yeah, no. And I'm talking more about the,
and I think Northwestern has like
a large and, you know, kind of an antique stadium from a big program. So, but yeah, so anyway, we've got Tyler. Tyler's been waiting patiently.
Real quick, Northwestern's football stadium is 35,000 capacity. They built a cute little soccer stadium.
It's a very cute stadium, though, Nick. Right on the water.
I feel like you're downgrading how cute it is because it is super cute. But yeah, like 35,000.
She's a 10, but for 35,000 people. But yeah, so if anybody can chime in, like, of the big programs, we'll talk Big Power Four, not Northwestern in there. I mean, you can include Northwestern, but again, they built a new stadium on an old or on like new land for them. So anyway, we know it wasn't Miami. So anyway, with that, before we do that, shout out to our friends over at Game Time Sidekicks. One time for our friends. Keep your hot drinks hot, your cold drinks cold. GameTimeSidekicks.com. Dozens of options for the University of Florida, hundreds of options for other schools and other interests that you may have in the future. Go visit GameTimeSidekicks.com. Use promo code Stadium15 to get 15% off of your order. And with that, for the first time, we welcome 247 recruiting writer Tyler Hardin to the show. Tyler, how are you, my friend?
I'm good, man. I appreciate you guys having me.
We appreciate you, man. What are your thoughts? How cute do you think Northwestern Stadium is?
It's cute, man. You know, Chicago area, can't go wrong, right? You know, like Nick said, you know, kind of a glorified soccer field, but hey, if it works, it works, you know?
That's right.
Well, Tyler, tell us a little bit about yourself. You've been on the beat for like a year now, a little bit over a year.
Yeah. A year and some change. Fresh out of college, I joined Swamp 24/7. Just kind of hit the ground running since. 5 days after I graduated college, actually, I moved over to Florida. So it was a, you know, pretty fast turnaround, but it's, you know, kind of been history ever since. And, you know, it's been a quick year, but here we are, you know, and it's been great being on this beat and getting to learn the University of Florida and, you know, kind of learn the Gator fan base and everything. It's been great. So
lively bunch.
Where are you from?
So I'm originally from Northeastern Pennsylvania. So about 2 hours north of Philly. And I went to school in Louisiana. So I'm from Scranton, Pennsylvania. If you watch The Office, you definitely
Thunder Mifflin.
Scranton. Yeah. So I'm originally from up there, born and raised in Pennsylvania. And of course I went down to Louisiana for school and, you know, spent 4 years down there and now I'm in Florida. So I've been around a little bit.
What was the culture shock going from Scranton, PA, kind of that area down to Louisiana for you?
It was crazy. Yeah. I mean, just the northern type of way of living to like the southern hospitality type of vibe. I mean, it was crazy. It took me like a whole year just to get used to where I was at and stuff. And then I kind of, you know, immersed myself into the culture and kind of, you know, because Louisiana culture, like I say, there's nothing like it in the country. So it's like 0 to 100. Right. So, I mean, I learned a lot being there, just like a different way of life and just being in the South in general. Yeah, it was definitely cool. Definitely a time in my life I'll always look back on. But, you know, like I said, it's been cool even getting to learn Florida. There's some nuances there as well. So, yeah, it's been cool just getting to see some SEC environments and different, you know, fan bases and how they do things and everything. It's definitely cool.
I love that.
There was that one show on HBO. It was like a cop show based in, I think, Michigan, where the people had like a weird accent. So I'm sure that there's some accents in Pennsylvania, but probably nothing like – somebody who just pulled up on like a John boat from the swamp talking to you in Louisiana.
Yeah, there is. A lot of people think like where I'm from is like Amish country and it's really not. Like Amish country is more in the center part of the state. I'm kind of in a part where you're not too far from New York City. So you kind of have that, but you're also not far from Philly. So you have that as well. So it's kind of like a triangle, I guess you could say. So yeah, we kind of get like a combination of the two.
Would people from New York say that they're in the triangle of Scranton?
Well, it's like the metropolis, I think they call it. So, yeah, kind of like Scranton, I guess, is in there with like the Poconos. And then you have New York City and then Philly and pretty much all of Jersey.
It's what, a couple hour drive, like 3 hours from Scranton to New York?
Yeah, it's like, you know, 2.5 without traffic. Yeah. So
listen, Michael Scott made that drive back and forth within the confines of a 30-minute show. So
he did. And
as far as I'm concerned, a couple blocks. Yeah.
Hey, he was flying. He made there in 30 minutes. You know, he was flying. So
Tyler, talk to us a little bit about your time covering the beat. So just like Nick, you come on board and we start firing coaches and we have turnover and everything else. But talk to us about your first year on the beat and then what this last, what are we, about six months into Billy, or geez, at the end of the Billy Napier era, into the John Summerall time. We're about 6 months in. Talk to us a little bit about that transition and what that's like been covering recruiting.
Man, it's been crazy. I mean, like I said, just being a young guy, you know, there's a lot of, you know, learning. There's a lot of lessons, you know, having been learned, you know, over, you know, the past, you know, several months, I guess you could say, just kind of like learning two different staffs. I mean, I kind of came into the onto the beat at like, you know, when it comes to the recruiting calendar, like the worst time, you know, to come on to the beat. It was thrown right into the fire with official visits and everything. And, you know, that was, you know, a lot of learning was done there, just not only, you know, kind of learning Florida in general, but just learning how to be like an adult, right? Like I said, it was 5 days after I graduated college, I started, right? So I didn't really even get to like reflect on like the fact that I just graduated college and now that it's, you know, into the new world. So there was that element as well. But yeah, it was just, you know, covering official visits and, you know, it was kind of a unique situation because people at first weren't really sure like what would happen with Billy Napier and if, you know, he would stick around or not. So it took a little while for Florida to kind of get hit the ground running. And, you know, it was an action packed summer where they pretty much built their entire class in a month and a half. So it was definitely interesting covering that. And then, you know, going into the season, of course, you know, halfway through, there's going to, you know, there was a staff turnover, right? So there was that element of it, and, you know, seeing if guys would hang on or if guys would flee ship. And it was actually pretty remarkable how it turned out, where, you know, the overwhelming majority of the class, you know, stayed. And I feel like we never see that in recruiting nowadays. So, you know, it was almost like it felt a little weird because of that. You know, that being, of course, my first go around at like a staff change, where, you know, just knowing that the industry, I know, like, you know, pretty much the entire class gets dumped, and, you know, other guys bring, you know, are brought in depending on who takes that job. So, you know, that not being the case, it felt kind of weird. But then, you know, John Summerall comes in, and, you know, then there's that element of it where he kind of has to hang on to this class in the final days before signing day. And then there was that. And then the transfer portal, you know, was a whirlwind, you know, just 2 weeks of utter chaos. And, you know, Florida obviously had a lot of additions there. And ever since then, it's really just been this 2027 class, and, you know, kind of being able to, you know, solely focus on, you know, the guys that Florida's targeting there. And it's really been that way ever since, just being able to, you know, really focus on the 2027 class, learn this staff at the same time. And, you know, ever since then, it's been pretty straightforward, I'd say, you know, kind of out of the noise, but at the same time, like, you know, just get my footing and, you know, learning this beat, you know, that much more.
So you've been able to kind of watch, you know, and going into last season, there was a lot of excitement about Billy Napier. Recruiting was doing pretty well. There was still some trepidation, right? Is this, you know, they ended the class, what was that, going into 2025 really strong, and they closed really strong. And then they went into the 2025 season with a lot of anticipation and a lot of hype. Obviously, we all know that ended about 7 games, 8 games into the year. Then John Summerall comes on board. Talk to us a little bit about maybe some of your interviews before, not by player, but like, what are players now or recruits now saying differently about this coaching staff, and not just John Summerall, but the other, you know, ancillary pieces compared to what they were saying last year?
Yeah, I think the number one thing, you know, feedback I've gotten just over these past several months that John Summerall and his staff have been in Gainesville, the energy is, there's just a lot more of it. There's just a lot more, you know, motivation. You know, everybody's so lively, where, you know, with the previous staff, it was a little more laid back. And, you know, the energy has just been so contagious. You know, it starts with John Summerall. It kind of works its way down. And, you know, everybody in the building just seems really amped up all the time. You know, these recruits are every single one, you know, I've talked to has said John Summerall is probably the most energetic coach they've dealt with. So I feel like that, you know, speaks volumes on, you know, just the night and day difference, it seems like, from the previous staff to the staff right now. And I feel like recruits have really gotten, you know, attention of that.
It is interesting. What so much of our at Florida Victoria, so much of our focus was retention. You know, we eventually get in contract with all of the, you know, freshmen. But for us, it was interesting just trying to keep those guys. And what could you say about what they did about retention? But then also, like, hey, we don't know if Jaden Woods is coming back. How do we piece that together? And I guess that's probably every coach now who is new, of piecing together what you have coming back with what you need. And then I guess I'll let you answer that, and I have another question after that. But how do you see them with what they've retained and be able to kind of pick up other pieces?
Yeah, I think there's two things with that. You know, firstly, just, you know, retaining your roster from, you know, the roster you inherit, of course. You know, that's kind of where this all starts. You can't really build a recruiting class, you know, unless you know, like, who's coming back, what your depth charts are going to look like, and, you know, and then some. So I feel like that was the most important thing. And when it comes to the success rate that John Summerall and his staff had, you know, just retaining the roster they inherited, you know, I felt like that just trickled down to, you know, recruits in the 2027 class saying, like, hey, if these guys are motivated to, you know, stick around and play for this staff, there's something there. There's something, you know, good there. So, you know, I feel like that motivated, maybe not all guys, maybe other guys had some different approaches, but, you know, when it comes to just looking at the staff as a whole, you know, I definitely say that worked in, you know, the staff's favor as well, just being that a lot of their roster did stay, you know, especially the most important pieces.
And then the second part of that is, Summerall has mentioned several times, they would love a new transfer portal, or love that second window, specifically for the offensive line. This will lead kind of into it. You're not a longtime Florida fan, but as Florida fans have been excited about this class, you've probably read it on the on your message board, seen it on social media, Kennedy Jackson aside, very excited about this offensive line class. And it seems to be that this staff is going to prioritize offensive line, defensive line, just kind of the way they're going at things. What can you talk us about? Talk to us about this offensive line class. I think I just saw that Maxwell Hiller is coming back on campus this weekend, but just some of the guys they've signed on the O-line.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously we got to start with Maxwell Hiller, right? You know, that's a historic commitment, you know, for a staff that hasn't coached a game at Florida. You know, that doesn't happen, right? We rarely see that anywhere. But, you know, I guess you could say, like, it's the easiest time to sell the vision is right now. And I feel like the staff is taking full advantage of that and getting those types of pieces in order for that vision to come through. So, you know, when it comes to Hiller, the relationship he had with Phil Troutwine, you know, beforehand just really paid off. You know, he knew they've known each other since Hiller was in eighth grade. So it's been several years in the making. But yeah, just getting that commitment to start off really kind of set the tone for the rest of the class to come. Kind of like I said, with the retention and just, you know, being an example of like, hey, this guy really believes, this guy really sees the vision. There's got to be something there. I feel like Hiller was really that guy for the 2027 class, kind of like that example. And, you know, just somebody that recruits the 2027 class really well. You know, he's a name that I hear frequently when it comes to, you know, what commits are reaching out to uncommitted guys. You know, Hiller is a popular name, so he's definitely hit the ground running recruiting and, you know, just being a leader by example and a vocal leader at the same time. And then you look at Peyton Miller, right? You know, when it comes to Hiller and guys he's recruited, Peyton Miller was one of the first, if not the first guy that, you know, Hiller reached out to once he committed to Florida to kind of get Miller in the fold. And obviously that ended up paying off. Miller is one of the top centers in the country, you know, definitely a great piece there. And then Elijah Hutchinson, right? You know, Hiller's being recruited up to play on the outside, but he's kind of like, I feel like that's what makes him so valuable. He's kind of able to play on the inside and the outside. But Hutchinson is definitely, you know, an offensive tackle, a true offensive tackle. And I feel like that was, you know, kind of the, you know, what put a bow on this offensive tackle class. And of course, you like to add like guys like Kennedy Jackson, right? But, you know, Hutchinson was definitely, you know, a great commitment on that regard, just being a true offensive tackle, kind of, you know, putting that piece together into the puzzle. So yeah, definitely three great pieces right now. You know, like you said, with Kennedy Jackson, of course, you want to have those numbers, but, you know, the three they have right now, you definitely can't complain.
I want to talk about this past weekend. Obviously, two huge recruits in town. Cedar Hill, Texas, five-star defensive lineman Jalen Brewster was in town. Five-star wide receiver Easton Royal out of New Orleans, out of Brother Martin High School, or Brother Martin School out there. You also had Raheem Floyd, a four-star defensive back out of East St. Louis in Illinois, and then Marquise Evans out of Birmingham and Spain Park High School. How did this weekend go? And I know that Gator fans are antsy to hear about how things went with Brewster and Royal.
Yeah, it was, you know, just from feedback I've gotten, it was a productive weekend for not having a lot of guys on campus. Of course, when you have two five stars, two of the top players in the country, it's bound to be productive. At least, you know, Florida fans would hope so. You know, starting with Brewster, I mean, the thing that
Tyler, really, can I interrupt you real quick? Do you just before we dive into them individually, was that, do you think, done purposefully to be able to dedicate as many resources as they could to those two?
Yeah, I mean,
cards fell visit wise.
I think a little bit of both. Honestly, you know, guys just continued to come off the board, you know, as May continued on and into June, you know, guys just continued to come off the board. So, you know, obviously they're going to cancel their official visits to Florida. You know, a couple guys moved their visits up. So, yeah, I think it was a little bit of both, you know, kind of being able to focus on those two guys. But, you know, something that was emphasized was like, it's not only those two guys on campus, right? They really wanted to prioritize, you know, all those uncommitted guys. They had a couple commits as well on campus. Some commits also made their way up unofficially. So yeah, I think that was, you know, kind of done purposely, but, you know, at the same time, like, you know, kind of putting it in the weeds, I guess you could say, and throwing some other important targets in there.
Sure. Sorry. Now you can go back to Brewster and Royal. My apologies.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
that was interesting to see because there were, I think, like two commits who were supposed to come or were coming on their OVs, and then all of a sudden you had like two, three more. It's like, oh, yeah, seems like a big weekend. Let's drive up.
Yeah, no, that weekend definitely saw a lot of movement, you know, as it was getting closer and closer. Some guys, you know, were backing out. Some guys, you know, moved their visits. Yeah, so it saw a lot of movement. But, yeah, with Brewster, you know, the thing that kind of caught my eye, and I honestly didn't even realize it until he told me, was that, you know, he's been able to see on his three visits now, he's been able to see the team kind of in action, whether it's practice or a game-like setting with the spring game. He's been able to see them in action three times. And, you know, with this OV, that was, you know, he said that was the highlight of his visit, being able to see the D-line room in action once again, Coach Chapman kind of getting after it with the other D-line coaches. You know, that was something he really appreciated seeing, just seeing everybody in action and seeing everybody moving around and just seeing how it operates. So that's something he's been able to see on like a consistent basis, you know, just seeing how it would operate on a day-to-day basis. And I think that's, you know, something small you can kind of look back on and say, hey, that may pay off, just him being able to see it with his own two eyes. And, you know, just being able to be around the program, you know, that much more, being able to get that many more perspectives, right? You know, Joe Hamilton and Gerald Chapman have done an excellent job and, you know, building those relationships with him. You know, I can say just from conversations I've had, they're probably the strongest relationships that Jalen Brewster has in his recruitment right now. Just, you know, the things he's had to say, you know, he only speaks very, very highly of them. So it's safe to say those two alone have had a tremendous impact and, you know, in Florida's standing in his recruitment. Yeah, I definitely think this official visit, you know, definitely strengthened Florida's standing in his recruitment right now. But it's, you know, obviously his recruitment is so competitive up to this point, you know, just with Texas Tech, of course, having the official visit coming up. The ball is still very much in Texas Tech's court until it's not. But I think Florida is definitely one of those schools, if not the school, pushing the hardest, you know, to flip him from Texas Tech. And then when you go over to Eastern Royal, right, another Texas commit, another huge flip target, you know, Florida's been in with him for the majority of the offseason. You know, he was coming off an official visit to LSU. Of course, that's the home state school. LSU made a big move, really caught his eye on multiple things, both on and off the field. And, you know, Florida did the same thing. I mean, this kid is a football junkie. He loves the X's and O's. He was supposed to leave earlier on Saturday, and he stuck around for an extra few hours just to, you know, be able to talk some more ball with the coaches and kind of, you know, pick their brains a little bit. You know, spent a lot of time around receivers. Dallas Wilson was his player host, so he was able to kind of pick his brain a little bit and kind of just see like a younger guy in the system, how he adapted and you know, how it benefited him, you know, early on in his college career, just being at Florida and seeing the things he was able to do and also just getting his perspective on being there. Right. So that was big. And, you know, just being around Marcus Davis as well, you know, Marcus Davis has done a great job recruiting him. And, you know, it's definitely going to be interesting with both Brewster and Royal. You know, I said it to somebody earlier, like these are two recruitments. They're going to go into the fall, no matter where they're committed. If they're committed to Florida, if they're committed to Texas Tech, if they're committed to Texas, LSU, who knows, right? This is going to go into the fall. These are recruitments where these schools will not, you know, back off until pen hits paper, right? So Florida's in it for the long game, whether they're playing offense or playing defense with both those guys. So it's going to be interesting, but Florida, you know, coming off the official visits, you know, I can confidently say there wasn't much more that those two guys were asking for. And it's all just about, you know, putting, you know, schools side by side and seeing what happens from there.
See, that's something I told members at our site too, because everyone, once the official visits were happening, everyone was, is the flip this weekend? And fans will get in their mind, they're like, oh, if they don't flip this weekend, we're wasting time, it's over. And I told people that. I was like, hey, especially Brewster, like, I know this kid is going to take a wait and see approach. Like, I don't think I'm sitting on the edge of my seat this weekend waiting for one of the two to flip. Would Florida love that? Absolutely. But even if they did flip this weekend, it doesn't change the fact that, like, hey, the recruitment is going all the way until, when's early signing day? December now?
Yeah.
Early
December. Yeah. So whether they're committed to you or another school, it's you're in the game until December.
Direct deposit's got to hit, Nick.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, you know, whether they're committed to Florida, no matter where they're committed, it's a matter of, are you playing defense or are you playing offense trying to flip?
Yeah.
right? It's going to go to the distance, and you know, it's definitely going to be interesting to watch, no matter, you know, where Florida stands in it, but you know, especially if Florida's the one trying to flip still.
Yeah, no, 100%. I want to ask you, Tyler, just going through the class here, this name stuck out because we spent a while talking about Kamarion Johnson last week, and he actually got bumped up. I think ESPN gave him a ranking, so he went from Florida's lowest-ranked recruit or somewhere near there to a four-star now. But of the people that are in this class, who is somebody that, like, sticks out to you as – maybe an under the radar prospect that Gator fans should be excited about, that's maybe not getting the love that some of the websites aren't giving?
Yeah, I mean, there's several players I feel like that could, you know, kind of fill that role. I'm going to focus here on the defensive line because, you know, a lot of people, they look at the three-star label and they're like, oh, it's just another three-star. But kind of the theme with the defensive line room is that these guys can play at several different spots in the line. And, you know, they were kind of going for the versatility aspect and, you know, just kind of getting more, you know, more bang for your buck, I guess you could say. So guys like Kane Van Norden, you know, his size and his ability to move at his size is pretty remarkable. And Zamar Tukes as well, just, you know, the amount of spots he can play, you know, impactful as well. So yeah, I'd say those two guys, Kane Van Norden, Zamar Tukes. You can even throw Steve Bentley, Kamaju, Yandui in there. He's kind of hitting his stride at the perfect time. You know, of course, he's from England and has only been here for the better part of a year. So he's kind of hitting his stride at the perfect time. And, you know, he dominated this past fall. And obviously that's why his offseason looked the way it did. His recruitment exploded. So I'd say, honestly, those three guys, like I said, there's several guys in this class that I think are kind of like, quote unquote, diamonds in the rough. But, you know, those three guys I kind of look at as like, hey, you know, these guys are going to be impactful if, you know, you were to ask me.
What, let's prognosticate a little bit. Who do you think are the next couple of our recruits that the Gators stand a good chance of maybe closing out this class? Already up to 22 commits, 16 blue chips, in there. But who do you think are maybe some other names that Gator fans should be looking forward to or looking out for at least?
Yeah. So in a few days, you know, another linebacker target is set to come off the board. Linebacker Robert Gethers, the third out of Charlotte, North Carolina. He's set to, you know, pick between Florida, Tennessee, South Carolina, and Georgia. I love where Florida stands there. I put a pick in, you know, sometime last week to kind of reflect that. So I like where Florida stands going into that one. You know, Florida, of course, has two linebackers already committed. That was kind of the sweet spot number, but they see Gethers as a will. Linebackers, so kind of like more of a versatile target there. So, you know, that's somebody the staff really likes, and I like Florida's standing going into that one.
Biggest competition there is what, South Carolina?
Tennessee, I'd say.
Tennessee, okay.
Yeah.
Nick would have JD Lane as his guy to keep an eye on for sure, the long snapper. Tyler, I want to get your perspective. You've covered recruiting now for a little bit. Did you cover it when you were in Louisiana?
Yeah, I did a little bit at LSU, but the main thing I did, and I ran it since I was a junior in high school, so 5 years, I ran my own thing called TTJH Sports. Those are my initials. I would do interviews with top high school prospects in the country over Zoom. I did like 1,300 interviews in 5 years. So it was like a big part of, you know, probably why I have this job today. And I'm extremely thankful for those experiences and you know, all the guys that I've met through that. You know, I still talk to some of them today. So, you know, just the connections I made there are priceless, but, you know, I'm thankful because it probably got me to this position for that.
And you're a hustler. You're a hustler. Yeah. I want to ask you, so since you've covered, obviously you've interviewed a ton of players. You went to school in Louisiana where it's tough to pull kids out of state. Florida right now, of their commits, only 32% are from the state of Florida. What's your perspective on that? Do you think that that's kind of a long-term strategy? Do you think that that's a direction that Florida is going to continue to go under John Sarmall? Do you think it's because, hey, we're trying to get the best group of guys we can right now? We have a new staff, relationships, you know, across the country as we're building them here in the state of Florida. Does that number concern you at all? And do you think that that's a trend, or do you think that that's kind of a one-year thing?
Honestly, you know, all the reasons you kind of gave there, I feel like, you know, kind of line up with it. It's to me, it's a matter of, you know, the amount of pins you can have in places, the more the better type of thing. You know, you don't want to, of course, you know, handcuff yourself and only be able to recruit in the state of Florida because, you know, you're going to miss on kids. That's just what the way recruiting works. Right. Sure. So you want to have, you know, flags planted in as many places as possible. And I feel like that's what this staff is doing, but they're also just going after the best guys and the guys that mm-hmm. they feel fits in the system the best. And if the kid's from California, great. If the kid's from North Dakota, great. If the kid's from North Carolina, great. Mm-hmm. Right. They're kind of planting flags, you know, wherever they have to. And I feel like that's why this class kind of looks the way it does, you know, pretty mixed bag of states and, you know, where guys come from, you know, a bunch of guys from up north, of course. So yeah, it's definitely been interesting to see, though, you know, how many different states they've crossed off with this staff, but, you know, with this class rather, but also, you know, the guys in Florida, they've been able to land, you know, over some certain schools as well.
Yeah, if they didn't have their own jet, you'd think that they're chasing some frequent flyer miles here. We have some questions from the crowd earlier. Nick's hopping back in. There you are. Tyler, what do you think of your cousin James Harden sullying the name with his gun charge?
No comment.
Which players or college team did you grow up rooting for?
Yeah, so my uncle was an Ohio State fan growing up, so I was an Ohio okay. State fan. And, you know, once I kind of got into the recruiting landscape, it kind of changed where, you know, I feel like I can't really look at any school, you know, with kind of like rose colored glasses on because, you know, I more times than not, I know somebody at the school or I'm like friends with somebody at the school. So it's kind of like my vision's kind of tainted a little bit. So like, I can't even look at the school I went to, you know, as like a fan school, you know, fan of the program. It's just kind of. Like it's a little different being that I went there, but like, that's really it. Like I just went there. Right. Like I know the school a little better.
It's funny when I met Nick was finishing up at UCF and I just moved to Orlando. We grabbed lunch. He's a huge Gator fan. Then he covered the team and Nick wasn't allowed to be a Gator fan. And then he just kind of became apathetic. It's like, dude, you can still cheer for him. He's like, no, there's nothing to cheer for. All the light in my eye has gone away. So it's good to see him back wearing some.
I had a full black beard and a full head of black hair before I started covering this program. I didn't know if you had a beard
at that time. I think you might have been clean shaven at that time. Maybe you did. So as a guy that's – I've spent some time up in the Pottsville and Scranton and Allentown area. How'd you make your way to a beautiful Baton Rouge, Louisiana from there?
Yeah. I mean, it was all about, you know, honestly, I just wanted to go somewhere different, somewhere I've never been. I mean, I found it on steroids. Mm-hmm. I mean, the first time I went to Louisiana was to visit LSU and I ended up making that decision to go there like a month later. So it was a really fast turnaround and yeah, I did not know what I was getting myself into as a freshman, you know, straight out of high school, you know, going to somewhere like that, you know, where it's completely different from where I grew up. I mean, from a small town in Pennsylvania, you go to Baton Rouge, it's not small and, you know, people are passionate and everything and you don't understand why they're so passionate because you're not from Louisiana. So
I thought you're going to say you don't understand them, period, which I was going to agree with too.
I mean, going in, yeah, like I didn't really understand, like, you know, not only just the fandom they had for LSU, but just, you know, the pride they had for the state. You know, mm-hmm. I feel like it's, you know, something you don't understand unless you're from there. And, you know, I appreciated that I was an outsider because I was able to learn. And I feel like if I was a part of it, I wouldn't appreciate it as much. So I was able to learn a lot there. And, you know, I kind of go into Florida the same way because, like I said, there's differences, you know, with every state in the South, in my opinion. So coming to Florida and, you know, being able to go to the different cities and kind of see what it's all about, you know, I've definitely appreciated that as well. And, you know, just going to Gainesville and seeing the history at Florida and, you know, just seeing the things people care about with UF. I mean, it's definitely cool to see, you know, from an outsider perspective once again.
Florida fans don't listen to me when I say this. People in Louisiana, like, you get out what you get back what you put out. People in Louisiana just want to feed you. They just want to feed you and show you the culture. Florida fans are like, they're so nasty to you. I'm like, as Dan said, like, I wasn't a fan. I was going to the games as like an unbiased mm-hmm. reporter. Had a lot of gumbo from the media parking lot up to Death Valley. People just like, hey, you from out of town? Yeah, sure. You want to try this shrimp? Yeah, why not?
Yeah, no, the crawfish boils are something I definitely look back on and, you know, miss it. right? I haven't had crawfish since I've been there, and you know, I'm waiting for the day I'll be able to have it again when I'm over there for some reason. But yeah, those were definitely good times, you know, crawfish season around Mardi Gras, you know, there's just nothing like it, right? Some good times back then.
Man, you got me hungry. Quick question here. The Gators hosted Raheem Floyd, cornerback out of East St. Louis, Illinois. Looked to be trending Missouri, but he was on campus this weekend. Seems like the visit went well. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, talked to Raheem yesterday. You know, it's definitely 50-50 right now, just from talking to him. And, you know, Missouri, of course, is the hometown school. You know, they kind of have a pipeline with East St. Louis where he goes to high school. Guys like Luther Burden and Toriana Pride all went to Missouri. So he's kind of able to pick the brains of those guys and kind of get their perspectives. He's also been talking to Nashawn Montgomery. Of course, that's a familiar name to Florida fans, you know, but, you know, that's kind of the perfect person to talk to if you're him, because he has points of views of both programs. So he's been talking to him as well. But yeah, the Florida OV definitely did a lot for him, you know, kind of like I said with Missouri, you know, he has a lot of different perspectives, and he was able to get more perspectives off Florida, you know, guys like Cormani McClain and Ben Hanks, who hosted him. Those were his two player hosts, and, you know, getting to talk to Brandon Harris more. And of course, John Sumrall, you know, definitely was able to kind of match different perspectives together and, you know, kind of just compare and contrast them, what those guys had to say. You know, Missouri is definitely going to be tough, in my opinion, just the hometown aspect and the familiarity he has at that school. But Florida definitely, you know, made a big move with this OV and definitely made it interesting. So, yeah, I think it's a coin flip right now until that changes. And, you know, he does some more thinking and talking with his family.
And I'm sorry, I missed it. Does he have a decision date announced?
Yeah, July 1st. July 1st.
July 1st. Okay. So about 15, 16 days from now. My apologies. On that. Well, man, Tyler, I appreciate it, dude. You're awesome. We'd love to have you back on the show.
Absolutely. Anytime.
You're a lot cooler than Blake and Zach and the rest of the guys. For sure. I'm just kidding. Those guys are awesome. But Tyler, you're the newest guy on the beat, and we've talked about like the Florida Gator recruiting and kind of the independent media beat, like, doesn't turn over very often. A lot of the people that have been here for a really long time. So super excited to welcome you to the Gator Beat. But let everybody know where they can follow you and read your material. And we appreciate you for carving out 40 minutes of your evening tonight.
Yeah, of course. Well, I'm over on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it, TTJHarden8, and over on Instagram, TylerHarden247. And of course, you can find my work over at Swamp247. And, you know, guys like Graham and Zach, who I work with, you know, we all do a great job, and we try our best every day. So yeah, give us a look. And, you know, our message board is always popping, so come hang out with us there.
That's a wild message board. It's been wild message board since you were in elementary school.
It is, but they're great. No, they're great. But
we appreciate it. We'll definitely have you back. First time, but not the last time.
Absolutely. No, 100%. Anytime, guys. Yeah, we appreciate thank you so much.
Tyler, have a good one. Welcome to Florida. All right, Tyler, that was a hell of an interview. Maybe a little bit more personal than we normally get, but like, he's new. About to kick ass on the beat.
Yeah. When we bring Blake on, Blake's Florida fans know Blake. If we bring Zach on, Zach's been in Gainesville his entire life. They know him. So introducing people to Tyler.
Yeah, no, shout out to Tyler. Great job. Go follow him. Great writer, and is definitely working hard. That is a hard beat to be on. The recruiting beat is hard. Fortunately, it seems like the recruiting season is a little bit more abbreviated now than it used to be. And kind of when it coincides with football season, maybe isn't as strenuous anymore, but it's hard. You know, you're trying to pull out quotes. You're trying to get them on the phone. You're calling, you're showing up to things when you're told that people will be there and they're not there. Things run over, things run late. You're waiting around. You're trying to use your binoculars to see who you see. You're trying to build your sources to say, hey, we'll tell you when somebody's on campus. They'll lie to you. You've got to, you know, it's hard. So
I don't miss those days of like sitting outside of Hevner, or sitting outside of like gate one by the Bull Gator, waiting for somebody. Oh, they took him out the back door. He's gone. Don't miss those days.
Hey, he'll be out in 20 minutes, and then it's like, oh, he's in his office, and 2 hours later, you just need a report. So Fortunately, that's never how I got paid. I always just did it for funsies. But those days are behind me now. Nick, I want to do a quick ad read, then I want to talk a little baseball, and then we'll get out of here. Time for friends over at Alumni Hall, go visit alumnihall.com or go visit them in Gainesville, Florida, the largest selection of Florida Gators wear that you're going to find. Again, go visit alumnihall.com or go visit them in Gainesville right on Archer Road. Gators announced officially today, but the news kind of broke over the weekend that they are bringing pitching coach Rich Dorman over from Oregon State, who developed 10 All-American pitchers in 7 seasons. Previously was a coach with the Seattle Mariners, if I remember correctly, and now he's the Gators' new pitching coach. On paper, seems like a home run hire, Nick.
I was muted. After I got kicked out, my tabs got all messed up. I mean, they've had just the school. Oregon State's had a ton of arms going back. But he's got 18 years of experience as a pitching coach, 10 at the D1 level. Look at them from, I think he was at Oregon State from 2020 to 2026. He has 15 draft picks, pitchers, all pitchers, of course. They're not crediting him with the shortstops. 15 pitchers drafted, 10 different All-Americans. I think they had 3 just this year, including one who just went in the transfer portal, who is a freshman All-American. That would be cool.
Something else, huh?
That'd be super duper cool if he followed his pitching coach. You know, you just want to, it's all about development, and nothing can throw off your development more than different coaches. So wouldn't mind to see him in orange and blue.
You've got maybe 2-3 more years as a player where you get to pick the coach that teaches you. So after that, it's not your choice anymore, pal.
Freshman left-handed All-American. Florida badly needs left-handed pitchers. Eli Blair was a DSA. That's a designated student athlete. I think he was the last left-handed pitcher on Florida's roster. So
what is a designated student athlete?
I need to look it up. So designated, I had to look it up for our board. Oh, I thought
that was like something that you made up, is like he's a guy that was on the team that maybe wasn't good enough to play, so he's designated as a student athlete. But it's a real thing.
It came from the house. Yeah, it came from the house settlement. It's slightly confusing. Let me look it up. The right for certain athletes affected by roster limits to benefit from DSA was a late addition to the settlement. It allows them to transfer.
Oh, okay.
But I think without using any kind of eligibility, I don't know. Okay. Allows them to transfer. Just means there wasn't going to be a scholar. Basically, it's a nice way to say you're processed.
Okay.
Somebody gets in. DSA kind of means like, hey, we didn't have a scholarship for you.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. So let me just run through Rich Dorman here real quick and what the Gators are getting out of him. As we mentioned, 15 draft picks, 10 pitchers became All-Americans. The 2026 and the 2022 national – I'm sorry, 3 in 2026, as Nick mentioned, the 2022 National Pitcher of the Year. Before that, he was at Grand Canyon and then 8 years with the Seattle Mariners organization. In 10 seasons in college baseball, 21 players drafted, an average of 2.1 per year. That math checks out. His staff this year, 3.22 ERA, just 6.94 hits allowed per 9 innings, and a whip of 1.14 in a strikeout ratio that was second in the country at 3.55 and third in strikeouts per 9, 11.8. Trey Morris, one of their pitchers that was an All-American, was a finalist for the College Pitcher of the Year. So 3 categories in which Oregon State ranked first in the country. That was ERA, hits per 9, and whip. Second in strikeout to baseball or to a walk ratio. Third in K's 9. 12th in walks per 9. 53rd in shutouts. 148th in hit batters. So
not good.
If we're looking for something to be critical about,
if you're going to give him a free base, at least make him wear it. They had a new coach.
We'll beam you.
They had a new coach. So Pat Casey was there at Oregon State from 95 until like 2018. And then they hired Mitch Canham. That's who was the head coach at Oregon State when Rich Dorman was there. They've had a long history of getting good players at Oregon State. I think last year they've got, it may have been 2 years ago, they had the second baseman who was a top five draft pick. So it is interesting. It doesn't seem like a place, Oregon, that you would get a ton of talent, but they've had some success getting talent. I think a lot of it is developing, and that's really, I think, what Kevin O'Sullivan mentioned. What a lot of the pitchers and a lot of the fan gripes I saw is like, hey, pitcher A got to Florida and didn't get any better. He was the same pitcher as when he showed up as when he left, and you didn't see a lot of progression. Like, Aiden King, I knew exactly what Aiden King was going to be when he stepped on campus as a freshman. Mentioned it to my boss. I was like, hey, Aiden King might be a little more expensive as a sophomore. And then he was the SEC pitcher of the year as a sophomore. But you're looking, as a high school player committing, you're looking to, hey, what have you done? And a lot of these guys now, like Kevin O'Sullivan has a unbelievable, almost unparalleled track record of pitchers. But like, do they remember those guys now, like the 16, 17, 18 year olds that you're signing, and like Alex Fajedo is who to them? Even before them, AJ Puck, Logan Shore, like those guys don't know. Like we're kind of in territory of Florida football where it was like, hey, they did the Swamp Kings and people are like, oh, that's cool. I don't remember that. And you're like, what? Mm-hmm. It's so getting a guy who has a proven track record of developing talent. Sully in the Florida program has always protected arms, which has helped get arms to campus. And I think you're bringing in somebody who has a proven track record of, hey, not only can we sign guys and recruit guys here, but you're going to be better the 3 years you're at Florida.
And then on top of that, the Gators lost their third base coach. Is that what I saw?
Yeah, Taylor Black. So Taylor was the outfield coach. Let's go back to the fall. Kevin Sullivan was your head coach.
Yeah.
Taylor Black was your outfield coach. Chuck Girolamo was your infield coach. Mike Rivera is the third assistant and coached, obviously, catchers. Chuck leaves. Taylor, they bring in Tommy. Tommy's an outfield guy, so he coaches the outfield. Taylor has to move to the infield. A mess. So you're going to be looking for a infield coach and probably a recruiting coordinator as well.
Okay. When can we expect an announcement in that front, do you think?
I think you'd want it pretty quickly because you're in the middle of the transfer portal. You'd like to figure that out. The only reason you would wait is if a coach is still coaching, I think. And not talking about Major League Baseball, because like if those guys were leaving, they would leave. Hold on, we got Frankie running into the room.
Yeah,
can you give that to Mama? She gave my daughter my wallet for the first time.
Nice.
Not good. Not good. Yep. The only reason you would have to wait is if it's a college coach still in Omaha and trying to do something. Yeah. If a Major League coach is going to make the move, they would just make the move. It doesn't matter. Like we are so far away from October. We haven't gotten to the All-Star break for them.
Sure.
So that's the only thing I can think of would be just trying to figure out, is it somebody, you know, one of the pitching coaches that had been rumored was Alabama's pitching coach. And I was like, oh man, if you're going to hire a pitching coach, you're going to have to wait a while until Alabama loses. I didn't see the score of their game, if they got knocked out today or not.
College World Series scores. Great radio. Georgia's losing to Oklahoma currently, and Alabama lost 14-2 to Texas.
Ooh, Texas snapped back after Texas struck out.
I don't want their pitching coach, Nick. 14-2. Get out of here.
Go Boomer Sooner. Just tonight.
And then we've got Troy, West Virginia tomorrow. The run that Troy's on might be a movie.
Yeah. I really like their coach, Skyler.
He seems like a good dude from the the interview that they had during the Gators game.
Yeah, he was I only sat in two press conferences that he was in. I don't know that they have it. He calls their team names the Trojans. He only called them the Trojies.
Nice.
Great day for the Trojies. I was like, that's not in a t-shirt. Then what are we doing?
Sounds like a hockey guy. You know what I mean? Good day for the boys. The Trojies.
Yeah. Yeah. They go out and they wax Florida. He's like, yeah, pretty good day for the Trojies. I was like, okay.
Upper necky for the Trojies.
Big time hockey there. He'll be a power four coach at some point. Just watching him and watching their run. Kind of rooting for them, like a bunch of guys that aren't supposed to be there. They lost their first game in the regional, had to win four straight elimination games. They lost their first game in Omaha. They bounced back today. So they got a long road out in Omaha. I miss being out in Omaha, Dan. We gotta get back there. We gotta get you out there. I miss Omaha. It'd be the first shirt.
Yeah, it'd be the first shirt. I hear Rocco's getting some public pushback for the first time.
Yeah,
commercialized, and apparently they've been treating some people maybe not the way that they wanted to be treated. I wasn't there. I don't know, but it seemed like the internet is maybe turning a little bit on Rocco's and their Jell-O shots, which are no longer made by hand. I mean, they're buying them
now. Oh, they haven't been in a while. They have not. They have not been
like
in
the second year, but maybe.
No. They were not handmade. They were shipped in. The last two times I was there, I think they're $5 a piece. I think all of this is coming from Pat McAfee. Crazy, as much as ESPN throws Pat McAfee in your face,
brother, $60 million.
As much as Pat McAfee, I think it's 65. But at that point, what's five million between friends?
You know,
what's five. Yeah, it's just a lunch at that point. It's crazy that somebody who like Rocco's is just whatever, like pizza's fine. It's drunk pizza. It's drinking pizza. I imagine they make their entire book during these 2 weeks.
Sure.
Like if they could close for a month and they'll be fine. They've made their book this week, these 2 weeks. The amount that ESPN throws Pat McAfee at you, like Pat McAfee. Rocco's, if the stadium is here, Pat McAfee is broadcasting from here. Rocco's is across the street. If you're at an intersection, Pat McAfee's hosting a radio show, a TV show that's on the TVs in your establishment and then gets off of TV and walks across the street, apparently ready to cut you a $300,000 check. And your guy's like, I don't know who you are. Your check will probably bounce. It's like, I was the guy on your TV 30 minutes ago, buddy. But yeah, Pat's just kind of saying like, I think it's cool. It's $5. I think like it's a little bit less than half of it. Well, they give, it's to a local food bank, and then to a food bank from each individual school. And then obviously they're running a business. They're not, buying millions and millions of dollars worth of shots. They need to make money. And like I said, this is their 2 weeks to make money. So we've all known that like, yeah, that's what it is. They're not. The Jell-O shots aren't good. It's cool. It was a lot cooler to me when it was organic. Sure. And you were buying shots there. And sure, your friend would call you while you're there and be like, hey, I'm Venmoing you $20, buy four shots. Or I'm Venmoing you $100, buy shots because I want to do it for the Gators. And then like the Raising Cane's guy came and bought 60,000 shots. And you're like, all right.
All right, cool. You win.
Less cool. And now like Blue Denim, I think is a jean company associated with Ole Miss, or the guys who run it are from Ole Miss. They bought a ton of you're not even drinking the shots. You're buying the shots
to donate to a food pantry in Oxford and Omaha. That would go a little bit further.
Hey, we were gonna buy shots, but instead we want to put the $20,000, into a food pantry. So it was cooler to me before companies got involved. Maybe it's running its course. Yeah, like, maybe it's running its course, which would be bad news for the owner at Rocco's.
Yeah. Well, Nick, I appreciate you for joining this week. Stadium and Gale. Appreciate Tyler Harden for joining us as well. Make sure you give him a follow. For Corey and Jordan, they'll be back next week. As always, go support our sponsors, Brunt Insurance, the Dykus Burke and Lewis Law Group, Game Time Sidekicks, and, of course, Alumni Hall. And we will see you guys at the same corner, same time next week. Nick, enjoy the rest of your anniversary. Peace.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.